The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber National Conference and Expo. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the program one more time, Afternoons with Mike, here on The Shepherd. It's not every day that I get to talk to somebody that's actually a resident from the Villages. Now, we talk about the Villages a lot here because we have an Ocala radio station, 720 WRZN, and then along with that is an FM that is actually located in Oxford, and that is right outside the Villages. And I have with me today Sumter County District 1 Commissioner Gary Search, who is a resident in the Villages. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself now. Are you a longtime Floridian, or did you move down from some other location?
Well, I moved down a little over 13 years ago from near Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour north of Philadelphia.
Yeah. What did you do up there?
Most of my career was in education. I spent a little time as a teacher. I spent some time as an assistant administrator, but I spent the last 30 years as a school counselor.
Now, did you enjoy that?
I loved every aspect of education.
Oh, that's great. Now, what drew your heart to education in the beginning?
Well, when I came out of high school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I loved sports. I played a lot of sports. And
did you play high school ball?
I was a high school wrestler and I was a high school baseball player.
Oh.
And ended up going to college. But before I went there, that summer, I coached a junior legion team. So there was an 18-year-old coaching 14, 15-year-olds.
Yeah. And you're just a little bit older yourself.
Yeah. I was the only one who could drive.
Oh, my goodness.
But we finished undefeated, taught them the aspects of the game. They were just great players. And I said, I want to spend more of my time helping kids and working with youth. And so I had the opportunity to go to college. Actually, my parents weren't too excited about that. College was not something our family did. Mm-hmm. We were hardworking, blue-collar family, and college was for those other folks. And I said, somehow this is going to work out. And I ended up paying for my 100% of my college education.
You worked your way through.
Worked my way through, took college loans, paid every penny back of college loans.
And, you know, that's something that a lot of people do not do in this day and age.
No, but I think it was my responsibility because mm-hmm. I put my name on a document that said I will pay it back.
Yeah. And you went to college up in Pennsylvania as well?
Up in Pennsylvania, Kutztown University, which was about 30 miles west of my hometown. It was an educational college, and that's where I got my teaching degree.
How close to Pittsburgh would that be?
Pittsburgh's on the west side of the state.
Okay, so
this
it's
is
a good
on
way.
The east, the side
yeah,
of the
good
state.
Ways away. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. I've spent a lot of time up around the Pittsburgh area, but only a little bit toward Philadelphia and on that direction, but not too much. That's a gorgeous area up there.
Well, and so is the Pittsburgh area. I've yeah. spent a lot of time as when I was counseling, I was head of the conference committee, and I would run conferences across the state of Pennsylvania for counselors and psychologists. Mm-hmm. So I got out to Pittsburgh quite a few times.
Now, you've seen a lot of changes in your tenure during all of that time of doing counseling. Tenure meaning the time you were there, the kind of the cultural changes that were happening in the students. When you look back, what were some of the big things that you saw kids that were going through toward the end of your time as a counselor versus early on?
Well, I've often said the kids didn't change. What changed is all the different technology in the media. When I was a youngster, teenager, I did some pretty impulsive things. that weren't ever going to be recorded and put online for the rest of my life. Teenagers, as I was coming through, they did the same impulsivity, but it was now being shown by their cameras. It was being recorded, and it was never going away.
Yeah. What did you tell your kids toward the end when you were seeing this develop? Did you encourage them to not be so active on social media?
Absolutely. I said social media should be for talking to your family, telling them of what you're doing, but not to be using it as a total outlet. The other thing that came to be is it became an avenue of what we now call cyberbullying, that I don't have to face you on things that I say to you. I can now type them and say things I normally wouldn't say to you face to face.
Now, it's been a while since you've been doing that, so it's gotten only worse since you left, right?
Yes, and I talked to my grandkids about that.
I bet you do. Yeah, because when you learn lessons like that and you see this developing, oh my goodness, it really does change one's, I guess, what you impart and what you talk about with your family, because no one would want a child to go through that kind of bullying, but that's exactly what so many do. They have to deal with it every day of their life.
Correct. Yeah, right.
Oh, that's tough. Well, you've made the move down. Did you come down here working in education, or was that the point of your retiring from that?
I had retired from that, and we were a little tired of snow and ice, which we get quite a bit of in the Northeast. And I had an opportunity to retire. My wife was in the medical field as a nurse and administrator there, and she looked at job opportunities, and she said, "I'm ready to move if you are."
There
but
you go.
She said, "If we don't move, don't complain about snow and ice."
Now, you moved to one of the most popular retirement areas in the entire nation. I've heard the villages talked about on there are radio programs that emanate. There was a very well-known Saturday night radio show that happened for years from the villages. And so it's talked about around the country. You see it. It's a very popular area, and it's growing like mad down there. It's growing crazy right now.
Yeah, the growth is just exploding. At one point, they thought they were going to be finished building out, and they crossed over this main highway called Route 44, and just continuing to build and expand.
And now they've grown over the turnpike, and that's pretty amazing to watch, too.
And there's golf cart bridges, right now one golf cart bridge that takes you over the turnpike to the southern end.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute, because anybody that knows anything about the villages will quickly start talking about the golf carts. But if people aren't aware, can you give us a description about what life is like when it comes to these golf carts?
Well, it's like owning your car, except you can get to every restaurant, at every hospital, medical buildings, stores, hardware places, Lowe's, Home Depot, by golf cart. There's 89 square miles currently of the villages, and you can get to 89 square miles by golf cart.
Isn't that something?
There are separate golf cart paths, and there's separate golf cart roads strictly for golf carts.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you think the villages, is this an area that you're happy about, that you made that move into this area?
I'm very happy about the lifestyle we're able to have and the people we've met, and everybody treats you very nicely. It's getting into the politics that I found it's a little bit different, but I've enjoyed tremendously the church that we found. We went, when we came down here, we went church hopping. We had to find a church that felt like home.
Well, before we talk about that, tell me a little bit about your background, even while you were up in Pennsylvania with the church. Were you raised in a family that walked that way?
Well, I was baptized Lutheran. I was raised UCC. I switched over to Methodist. And then I helped a non-denominational church get started before we moved down, where we were, our congregation was one-third white, one-third black, and one-third Hispanic, almost to the exact number.
Oh, my goodness. That is a really diverse.
Yeah, tremendously diverse inner city church. I was raised in the church. My parents, to make extra money, as I said, they were hardworking, blue-collar. We were the sextons of the church. So on Friday nights and Saturdays, we were cleaning the church and then going to church on Sunday. It was mm-hmm. not an option.
Now, tell me a little bit about the family makeup that would have been, maybe just as you said it a while ago, a little bit against higher education, college, and all that. What about that? What about that issue of college did they not relate with?
Well, neither of my parents went to college. My dad got to eighth grade, and then when his father passed away, he had to take care of the farm. Mm-hmm. My mother was able to complete high school. And they wanted for all of us as kids to graduate from high school. But at that point, your career should be something either in the industry trades that were around the area or mm-hmm. in the military. My dad was hoping we would all go military for a while.
And he was military?
He was one of eight survivors of the first wave of Normandy.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah. And the only reason he did not perish that day is he took a 9mm in the left side of his body that went on his right shoulder, picking up his buddy who went down in front of him.
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah. So
and you thank him if you well. Wow. Yeah, he's long gone.
Yeah. He is, but he's a hero.
Yes, he's a hero. I mean, even hearing that, I'm affected. That's just amazing because I think this too is another first, a person who was directly involved in that invasion.
Yeah.
That's just an amazing heritage. Well, that explains a lot to me. I mean, there was a great sense of loyalty mm-hmm. to the military for those that were serving. And when you're able and you do invest that way into this country, it's something you want to see your kids do.
Right. And that was the vision they had. It wasn't that they were against higher education. They just saw a sense of serving the community and serving the country.
Well, obviously, you've done the latter or the former. You've done both, but I mean, serving the community—that's something that you have done. And even with the avenue that you chose to go to college, you still fulfilled their dreams for that. And I'm sure. And I think probably it sounds like they're like many people. They're just not that familiar with something, and what one is not familiar with, one can be a little suspicious about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were the proudest day was when they came to college graduation. You know, they were just beaming. Of course, so was I.
Yeah, but, it's over.
It was starting to be over. I never knew I was going to go for master degrees. But,
right.
But, you know, for them to see that and say, hey, our family can do this. And my brother was currently in the military, my older brother. And when he came out, he says, so we can do this college thing. And he then went to college and became an educator himself.
Yeah.
And as well as a firefighter.
Now, did with all of this ministry experience, different churches, different denominations, did you find yourself coming out of that at that age in college with an understanding of the gospel? Or was it kind of maybe a little mixed up because of the different types of backgrounds that you'd been a part of?
Well, not really. I just found denominations to be some rhetoric that humans put into policies. But everyone that I went to was Bible-based
mm-hmm.
and used the Bible as their guide.
All right.
And by using that, you have a straight compass.
What was the first experience that you remember where your faith was really tangibly yours?
Probably when I was about 13 or 14, when I became the head of the confirmation class at church and had to do some more leadership type things and lead Bible study, if you will, at that level, or help in leading Bible study. And trying to say, okay, this isn't something my parents forced me to go to church. And as I went to high school and college, it was like, this is something that's drawing me back to the church. It's not pushing me away.
Oh, it's great. What do you think it would have been your favorite verse that you remember? Did you ever memorize verses back then?
Didn't really remember do verses as much. I mean, you know.
Are Bible stories that were your favorites?
Well, I always refer to Paul in Philippians all the time, and I'm always looking at how he could sit in prison. He could be shackled and flogged.
Isn't that something?
And then still talk about the joy of knowing the Lord.
Oh, I love it, and I agree completely. And that is a really good picture to have in one's mind because, well, again, there's thinking about what everyone goes through in their life. When we compare what we're going through to what he went through, it's pretty light going.
Yeah, it wasn't in the same kind of prisons that we have today.
No, no. And I think even in your family, just still being affected and moved by the story of realizing that what your dad saw on that beach that day in Normandy, the things that he experienced and he lived through. Yeah. Boy, that is not light and momentary afflictions right there. He really did it.
I often think back and say, why was he spared? And why am I alive on this earth? And what am I called to do? Being just one of eight people who made it through with a whole infantry division of the 4th Infantry Division out in New Jersey, Fort Dix. It's always looked at it, and I've always looked at, just to switch gears a little bit, I've always looked at the cross and said what Jesus did to the cross, because before it was a symbol of shame to the family, and he turned it into a symbol of victory.
Yeah, that's right. Cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, is what the scripture would say. But he became a curse for us.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, he did. He reversed that around and brought glory to God the Father because of his obedience to death. Oh my goodness, this is a beautiful thought. Gary Search is my guest today on the program. And Gary is from the Sumter County area. He's a District 1 commissioner, and that's going to be something we're talking about when we return. A really nice guy from the Villages who gets involved in politics. And what an eye-opening experience that is for us all when that happens. We'll be back with Gary in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. In the studio today with Gary Search, Sumter County District 1 Commissioner. And I have to tell you, Gary, I'm still affected by Segment 1's discussion about your dad being one of eight survivors of Normandy. And he was on the first, did you say on the first boat?
First wave in Normandy.
He saw, you know, anybody that's seen a movie like Saving Private Ryan, that's all the visual one needs to get just a bit of what had to be one of the most hellish things that any man has ever gone through. But your dad lived through that. I was so affected. I'm telling you, you know, tell him thanks. And he's been gone from us now for what you said,
15 years.
Yeah. But I'm just grateful even still for what he did. And, you know, as an American, I know that you're very proud of your dad.
Absolutely. To me, he's still the hero generation of what they did. And when he did it, he went down to Philadelphia to sign up when he was 17. Mm-hmm. His death certificate and his military papers are a year off because he lied about his age and went into it when he was 17, but said he was 18.
Mm-hmm. Because he wanted to be in, and he couldn't have been in legally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of people did that back then.
Yes. Yeah.
And we would not see that happen today. I do not believe. But that strong heart, that is part of the character that it's made America what it is today, or at least what it was. And we're praying that we can get back to some of that.
Yes, yes.
It's going to take getting back, though.
Oh, absolutely. We've got to, you know, we can't keep saying they were the greatest generation.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to say we want to continue to be a great nation and one nation under God.
Well, now that leads me to this point that I wanted to ask you in this segment. What was it? Was it that? Was it that need that you see? Because you retired from all of these years of serving and working hard as you did as a counselor in education. You come down and you're kind of in the retirement. You're in the nice weather. You could have driven that golf cart every day and probably had a lot easier times, but that's not what you chose. What do you think it was that made you choose to go into running for public office?
Well, to go back a little bit, when I was in Pennsylvania, I was also not only in education, but I was also a commissioner in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
In local government. And people encouraged me to run because we had some issues going on in the local area. People knew me as a counselor, an educator, as a coach. And my brother, who was assistant fire chief, and my dad, who worked as a fire policeman, said, you need to get involved in your community. We need some new commissioners in there, and you need to run. And that was my first taste of running for public office. And I enjoyed every year of that because I enjoyed having people there, listening to the people and talking to the people and being part of changing the community for what I felt and what the people were telling me for the better.
Now, when you did your first election, your first running, did you win the first race?
Well, that's the interesting thing, and that's the thing that gets publicized sometimes negatively up in the villages. We had three commissioner positions open, and there were eight people running for those positions, and you got a ballot position. And I was not given the eighth ballot position, which puts you at the very bottom, almost obscure.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they're looking through seven other names before they get to yours.
And a lot of times, according to most people that do political studies, is they click the first three. Well, I had so many friends on both sides of the aisle. It was a very strong Republican area. I was a conservative Republican, but I had a lot of conservative Democrats, or moderate Democrats, I think is the correct terminology. And they had nobody to vote for. And they said, you know what, to make sure you get on the ballot, we're going to write your name in on the Democratic side, because they had nobody to select, but they did have a write-in ballot in Pennsylvania.
So you could be on the Republican printed ballot and be written in
on the Democratic side.
Now, I don't know if I've ever heard of that being done before.
Well, it's never been heard of down here, and they can't comprehend it because they're trying to figure out how I got elected as a Republican on the Democratic ticket, and they actually hammer me on that issue, mm-hmm. being in a Republican stronghold. But it's part of the truth. And so I got elected because I had so many Democratic write-ins, and we had a Democratic governor at the time. And so I got put in the first ballot position for the general election and got elected.
Oh, my goodness. That is an unusual story for a fact. And I'm trying to get my brain around what all of the Democrat people, the candidates that were actually printed on the ballot, what they thought about that.
Well, there were no Democrats on the ballot because there was nobody running.
Oh, I see.
That's the only way they could write me in.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm understanding that. Well, that is a particular problem, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't a problem. In fact, I was lauded for that in Pennsylvania and then ran for three more elections as a conservative Republican on the Republican side, mm-hmm. and won handily. Came down here, and when I was asked to run for public office here, people were using that against me.
Now, how did they find out about it? Did they dig that up out of the annals of news?
They hired a investigative firm out of Tallahassee to find anything they could, because I was running against incumbents who were well-liked by the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking for anything they could find, and they were trying to push that I was this hidden closet Democrat. My whole point in local elections is this. If you call me, I don't ask what party you are. I ask how I can help you. If I'm there as a local official to work with you, to help you, I'm there no matter what party. I always said I wanted to feel like Ronald Reagan, who could reach across any aisle and talk to people.
You know, there was a day that I think a lot of leaders nationally and otherwise were able to do that.
Right.
It seems that that is a lost art, too, in this day and age.
Right. But that's how I was brought up. The same with people walking into church, whether they have a suit on or torn clothes, if they're coming to worship the Lord, they're coming to worship the Lord. Mm-hmm. Let's invite them in and welcome them.
Mm. I love that. And it's, I think a lot of what makes up reasons for people not wanting to run is exactly what you were talking about. It's the intimidation by those that will set themselves against one for whatever reason. And, you know, you have an investigator hired to try to find something about you that's a wrinkle and trying to get you disqualified.
Right. But I, along with two other new commissioners, ended up winning by 75% of the vote.
Wow.
Because we went out face to face, like you and I are doing now, talking to people every day through the whole summer, along with my wife, who stood by my side, and we just talked to people, and we told them who we were, what we were trying to do, and why we were running for office.
Mm. Mm. And that kind of rapport is what we need. We need people who are going to take the time to get to know not only the people, but the problems that the people face. And that's really what you do.
Right, right.
Yeah, and you said Debbie's been right there. I think it's Debbie, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and Debbie is your wife.
Correct.
She's in the studio in the other room with us here today, and it's really great to meet a couple like you that are out there doing it.
Well, she's my rock. I rely on her. A lot of times this is rougher on her than it is on me, because if the roles were reversed and people were attacking my wife, I'd be all over them.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets annoyed when she sees newspaper attacks that aren't true, just to try to convince people otherwise. But I said to her, as we go to church all the time, and I also, one of the church council leaders, I said, you know, we have a great Lord who was crucified far more than we're ever going to be.
That's true. And that is true. And going back to what he did for us, we'll never match that and never could. And I'm grateful for what he did. How long after you moved down to Florida did you run for office?
Well, I just ran a year ago. I was here about 10, 11, 12 years.
Oh, and so all of that time, those investigators let all of that time go by. And
well, I wasn't planning on running for office during that time.
Yeah. It is amazing
it's when these new people show up, yeah, and all of a sudden they're changing the wrinkle.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about what it's like now to serve as a commissioner in your area.
Serving the people of the county is absolutely wonderful. The county is so diverse. When you have the villages, which is, as you pointed out, a very unique retirement community, but you also have some very rural areas, and almost like western areas, like
mm-hmm. Old Florida, yeah,
like, you know, Crumacoochee and Panasoffkee and areas like that, and they have unique needs that are so different. The county is so diverse, and traveling the county and getting to know the county. When I first moved here, somebody would have said Crumacoochee, I would have said Crumahoo.
Yeah, right.
But in meeting with those people and going down and talking to them, I recognized they needed some basic needs. There were a lot of people, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, that were out of work, didn't know where they were getting food. I have some great friends in the villages in that church who operate the food pantry there, and just in the city of Wildwood. So I talked to them and they said, Crumahoo. And so we went down there and met with the people, and we started a fantastic food pantry down there to help feed the people. At Lake Pan, we helped them as a food pantry too, and took down freezers and refrigerators. We're just part of the community. We've also part of our church ministry called Helping Hands. We are going to be building our 32nd home for deserving families, and we've repaired hundreds of homes. So it's all part of reaching out into the community.
I love this. Hearing what you're doing, hearing the heart of a person who's representing, again, it is very clear to me that the value system that your parents built into you, it's what you're putting forward out there. Yeah. It's this giving back thing that and helping the real need of the community. It's a rare thing to see, and I love it. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate doing it because that's what you're called to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this something now that you've done it, you've been in a little over a year, is this something that you see yourself running again?
It's kind of early to be able to say that.
It's a four-year term, right?
It's a four-year term. As I said before, right now we have a developer-owned newspaper who doesn't like that we won the office and has written some very disparaging articles against us as new commissioners. A lot of it is not true, but they have the power of the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to prove anything they do, and they're trying to convince the people that maybe you don't want to elect them back. But I have also the power of talking to people straightforward and being honest with them and truthful with them. And when I'm out of office, I tell them exactly how I feel, why I will vote a certain way. And I also say, if you want to meet with me, talk with me, give me a call. I'll spend as much time as you want.
Mm. What do you think the biggest needs are in the area in Sumter County?
Well, again, I go back to it's such a diverse county. The Villages itself is a very unique and actually a wonderful, wonderful place. And they're pretty well self-sustaining, and the needs really aren't there. The needs are in the cities like the city of Wildwood, city of Webster, the city of Bushnell, but also Lake Panasoffkee and Crew-Macoochee, where the needs are totally different. And it's like I said, it's rural. There's nice farmland down there, but there's also some poverty. And it's reaching out to those people and giving them a hand up, not a handout, but mm-hmm. a hand up.
Now, do you feel that the infrastructure issue that's being talked about so much nationally today with this big infrastructure bill, with the area, because a lot of these areas you're discussing are really, like we said, part of old Florida, really not a lot different than they would have been 50, 60, 70 years ago from the standpoint of the county services and things that they have there. Do you feel like they're in trouble infrastructure-wise?
In driving around the county, I think in most part our infrastructure is pretty sound. But there are needs. Again, it goes probably to the southern end of the county where we've got to look at the roadway systems, which have not been kept up. And most of the bridges seem to be okay, but it's the roadway systems that have been probably neglected for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. My guest today is Gary Search. He's Sumter County District 1 Commissioner, a man of faith, a man who loves the Lord, and a man who loves serving the people of his community. We'll be back with him for one more segment in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. A fun visit today with a man that is from the Villages, that area, Gary Search, not your typical county commissioner by any stretch of the imagination in my mind, from the standpoint of his background, the heritage that his parents have given him, and the love for his country that has driven him to go back in now a second time into politics. And as we've heard in segment two, not necessarily with all of the people excited about it, and really sadly reporting in such a way that is not representing what you feel is the actual things that happened or really are even issues as to why you were voted in that unusual way up north. I appreciated your explanation about that, but it's not uncommon to see this kind of stuff happen, and it's sad, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I just like to stick with the truth. You know, we have always said the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, you know, what is the truth?
And, you know, we have so much today that I never would have believed this, but is reported, and it's reported on TV, it's reported in newspapers, and it's not the truth. It's not even what has been represented. For example, we're going to talk a little bit about the whole pandemic thing, but there's a lot about the pandemic that is reported differently just because of the narrative that's desired to have this one slant. And something can be happening altogether different, but no one hears about it because of that.
Absolutely. And that's what's really hard, especially with all the different media outlets and, you know, the internet, and you're trying to find out which doctor is telling you what information and what is true and what is what should I do as an individual to protect myself, protect my family, protect others.
Now, what do you see when it comes to your work with the people in Sumter? What are you seeing yourself with your own eyes regarding this pandemic?
Well, I think initially a lot of people turned themselves in, became isolate, and sometimes because it was created with things being all shut down, people couldn't go outside, couldn't mm-hmm. do various things.
Businesses boarded up, basically.
Boarded up, couldn't go to restaurants, yeah. couldn't go to places like that. And so people started finding creative ways. They started having driveway parties. And people gathering in streets and finding different ways. Our church, at first being shut down, and Jesus wasn't considered essential.
Isn't that something?
Okay. But churches were closing down and for live worship. So churches had to find a different way to reach people, to get out to the people, because people needed to hear the word.
Right.
On a weekly basis. I always look at it this way. I charge my phone on a regular basis in order to keep it charged. And I need to go to church on a regular basis in order to keep myself charged in the Bible. And so as church leader, we looked at ways that we could do virtual worship.
Mm-hmm.
And we started putting together virtual worship until we could gather live again.
And, you know, so many churches did the same thing. And,
right.
and we were talking in the break with all the bad things that's happened inside the pandemic and within this last year. But there are a few silver linings that kind of came out of the pandemic. And one of them was it did force a lot of churches who were not into streaming or live streaming. I think everybody now understands that term, live streaming. It was something that we didn't use that much before. But now church services, for the most part, in just about every congregation, are going to be live streamed. And that's not an entirely bad thing. I think it can be a negative if people who were part of that church before don't come back face to face.
I agree. Our church is probably, at this point in time, coming back about one third live. People still feeling unsure, unsafe. I think some people feel comfortable sitting in their living room, but face-to-face worship and that community of talking to each other and knowing there's a church family there for you is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But during this time, we have gone from a real basic digital virtual service to now a very professional one. And
you mentioned you had a couple of people that the church actually employed to kind of bolster that, right?
Yeah, we had to reach out and find people who were actually very professional in digital experience and live streaming in order to get the word out in a more professional way. And now people are recognizing we have a challenge going on right now that can we reach people in all 50 states? And I think currently we're in people's homes in 42 different states.
Eight more to go, and you got it. That's amazing. Well, tell us a little bit about the church that you're referring to here.
Well, it's New Covenant United Methodist Church. We always, our pastor starts the service out, a place to call home, a place where you feel comfortable. And when my wife and I first were here, we church top. We knew we had to find a church. We had no clue. We didn't care what denomination it was, as long as it was community active.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to various churches for a while and ended up going to New Covenant and felt good about it, went back a few because we always say, you know, 3-4 services, you get a feel.
Mm-hmm.
The people in all the churches were beautiful and friendly, but there was something different about New Covenant, and it did feel like home. And when we heard about all their outreach ministries and how the church is not just worship service on Saturday night and Sunday, but what they do Monday through Friday in the community just blew my mind. And I said, this does feel like home. We've got to get involved.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get involved?
Well, I'm kind of one of those, once you throw your towel in,
you're all in.
I found one of the ministries, which is called our Helping Hands Ministry, which was it was and is still building homes for families in need. And it's a hand up, not a handout, but it's families that have experienced some things that if they got a break in life, things would be a whole lot better. I think about a family my wife and I mentor. This young gal was a beautiful young lady raising 3 children, and she was living in a deplorable apartment, and she got her teaching degree in spite of that. But she was never going to get out of where she was because of what her ex-husband had done, both financially and otherwise. And she became a homeowner that we built for her, and we mentor her. Once we take a family, we are assigned mentors to them that we stay with them through the whole process. We still talk. And that was about 9 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Now, this is directed from your church?
Directed from the church.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, from the ministry.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
This young lady has not only completed her teaching degree and her master's, she's also has a real estate license now, and she took some courses. She's now a paralegal, and next year she's going full-time to law school.
Wow.
This is just how this young lady has been benefited by somebody recognizing, and there's other family stories just like that in this whole process. And we interview them, take them through finance classes, take them through all kinds of things to see, are they the family that deserves to get home?
Mm-hmm.
And they still, like I said, it's a hand up. They pay us back $15,000 over 5 years, interest free, which is $250 a month. And then the home's theirs, and we signed it over to them. And they're just lovely families who just need a break. And that's just one of, I think, 28 outreach ministries the church provides.
Wow. Now, do people who apply for this, like a home like that, is there a process they go through? I'm sure there's a big application process.
There's a big application process, an interview process where they come in and we interview them personally. Then we assign other people to go out to where they're at, interview them outside the church, and we spend time going over their whole portfolio and looking. And the hardest part, the very hardest part, is we sit down as a group at sometimes 10 or 12 people, sit down and narrow it down to 2 or 3 families.
Mm-hmm. And that is tough.
It's very tough.
Because anybody that has a heart like you do, you want to help them all.
Well, there's a lot. Sometimes you can get down to a certain number and it's like, oh boy. And so we'll look and say, well, let's do these 2 or 3 this year. Let's keep these on the records for next year. But it is tough.
Are you actively building one right now?
We are waiting for the materials to come in on one right now that we hope to get started in mid-October.
You know, that is a problem in and of itself from what I've heard from so many angles, that building supplies are not available like they used to be.
Right, right. And so there's a delay, but there's a hope too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're promised that mid-October this will get done.
Wow. In the time we've got left, Gary, I've enjoyed this chat so much. Tell us a little bit, let's swing back to the conversation for a moment, to your work as a commissioner. What are you seeing the balance of this year, on and into 2022? What are you seeing happen in Florida? Are you seeing what you consider to be positive things?
To to a certain degree, I think the state obviously is growing in terms of people wanting to be here. It is one of the biggest states in terms of economic growth and population growth. And we have to do that carefully. I also sit on the Withlacoochee Water Authority, mm-hmm. and looking at the groundwater and making sure you might all want to move here, but you got to make sure there's drinking water, mm-hmm. and that we're doing the correct things there. I think there's a lot of positive things on the horizon for Florida, and I'm just as a new commissioner to the area, wanting to get to know as much as possible. I've in the first 8 months, I became a certified county commissioner, along with two other new commissioners. I've also applied to be an advanced county commissioner, and I go for that training in 2 weeks. And, you know, to learn as much about Florida and to know what are the right things to do for not only Floridians, but incoming Floridians.
Mm-hmm. And because we have a lot of them, and they're coming in the same way and from the same direction that you came, from the Northeast especially, with all that's been going on up in New York, we are getting a lot of people coming down from the Empire State and other areas as well. And so there's a lot to be considered. And it sounds like you're doing a good job of doing just that.
Well, you want to, but I'll go back to there's a lot of people I find that are unchurched coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a big job to do to reach out to those people. And so that they know, because we're called to be the hands and feet and voice of Jesus.
I love it.
You know,
great, great thoughts from you, Gary Search, my guest today. I can't thank you enough for coming by, and hope you and Debbie have a really nice visit in Orlando here before you head back home. And God bless you for dropping by, and thank you for your heart to serve.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate the invitation to be here and express my love for Jesus.
I love it. Thank you so much. And friends, we'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber, National Conference, and Expo.